When I was in middle school, I always wanted to be outside as much as possible. So me and my friends after school, we'd meet up, ride our bikes around town over breaks, and summer was just the best. But it was especially like hot in the summertime, and you can only be in 95 degree heat for so long, but you don't really want to go home. So our solution, and this is a little bit embarrassing, our solution was that we started using storm sewers as our refuge as teenagers. And we sort of had, where I grew up, we sort of had all the sewers mapped out. So we knew how to get from A to B actually faster than you could above ground. We were like a combination of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and the Goonies. It's like something in between there. And we had all this mapped out. And the most important part of that was just me being an obedient son, because my mom said I could never cross Telegraph Road, which was the main road where I lived. And I said, well, if I can't go over it, I'll find a way to go under it. And so the most important access points were those that would go underneath Telegraph Road, because my best friend lived on the in the parish was on the other side of Telegraph Road. And so one day there's a Starbucks that got put into our hometown, which felt like the world was coming to Oakville, Missouri. It was awesome. We're like, let's go to Starbucks. And I remember having a cup of coffee, which was just disgusting for a 13-year-old. And we leave Starbucks, and then I'm looking right at a storm sewer, like an outlet that's going right under Telegraph Road, and I am jazzed. And so I said, all right, boys, we're doing this. And I lead the charge with three guys behind me into this sewer. And there's light coming in because it's daytime. And we get under Telegraph Road. I'm like, this is awesome. Where is this going to let out? How can we use this in the future? And I make a hard left turn. That's what sewers do. They turn. And then there's no light at all. And so we're walking along. There's three guys behind me, and I can't see anything. My buddy pulls out his Samsung flip phone, and I can't. The light is so weak, it's totally useless. And there's a can down there, so I start kicking this can in front of me, kicking the can, kicking the can, kicking the can, kick the can, and then it makes no sound. I say, guys, stop. And we hear it drop a few seconds later, like 40 feet below us, which is the first time I really thought I have a guardian angel to save me. But what a stupid idea to go into a storm sewer, without a flashlight or anything. And we never used that sewer again. It was completely useless to us at that point, and it scared the heck out of me. And I tell you that story in light of Advent, because I really do believe that so often we're living in something of a dark and confusing world, that our lives are unpredictable, and it's really unwise to go into those places without light. And I think so often we do. And the beauty of Advent, what the wreath shows us and everything else, is that the light of Christ is breaking into the world, and there's an invitation for us to actually receive and accept the light so that he can bring light to our darkness. He can bring clarity to our places of confusion, so that he can lead us in the ways that he desires. But I think it's a really dangerous thing to go into these places on our own, devoid of the light, trying to figure out how we're supposed to do all of these things. There's three comings of Christ that the church knows and celebrates. The first coming has already happened, that he came in the flesh once and for all, that Jesus became man. He was born of the Virgin Mary in a town of Bethlehem. He grew up in Nazareth. He preached and he taught. He was crucified on a cross under Pontius Pilate. He is a real person. And the second coming is that every day he wants to encounter us. You're going to receive him in the most holy Eucharist today at Mass. That's not nothing. It's Jesus coming into our midst. And the third coming is at the end of time, when Jesus comes back to judge the living and the dead, to separate the sheep and the goats, that those who have lived in holy conduct, like St. Paul says, will be received into heaven. And yet you and I, so long as we're here on earth, we're in this time of trial, this time of testing. Would we allow the light of Christ to permeate our lives so that we don't continue to walk into the darkness? I the beginning of John's gospel, always worth reading. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And he tells us about this Word. And he says, what came to be through him was life. And this life was the light of the human race. This life was the light of the human race. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. It's gorgeous. It's beautiful. The darkness has not overcome the light that Jesus brings into the world. And yet, John continues on to tell us, he came to what was his own, and his own people did not accept him. And his own people did not accept him. That Jesus consistently tries to bring light into our dark places, and we consistently do not accept him. How do we welcome the light into our lives? What does it look like for Jesus, for us to ask the Lord to bring his light? At the day of your baptism, as original sin was driven away, three gifts were poured into your soul: faith, hope, and charity. That's how we let the light of Christ grow in our hearts. We ask for faith, we ask for hope, and we ask for charity, for more love. What is faith? Faith is us clinging of my heart and my mind to realities that I cannot see, especially the realities of God, that God is real, especially all those places that I don't have control. The opposite of faith, I've said this before, the opposite of faith isn't atheism. The opposite of faith is me controlling my own life, manipulating things so that everything sort of works out for me, and then I'm trying to protect myself. That's control. That's an absence of me really leaning on and trusting in the Lord. What real faith looks like is actually letting the Lord take the wheel and say, I want to follow you whatever you lead. You just have to show me. We cling to a person. Jesus Christ is a real person, folks. He is real. He's not dead. He's very much alive. He's a real person that you can have a real relationship with, that you can speak to every day, who knows the things that you're going through. Why do we treat him like he's not real? He's not a myth. He's not a fairy tale. He's not a guy up in the sky. He is a real person that has come into the world and is trying to break into our lives. It's a person you can speak to, a person that you can love, a person who tries to speak to you, a person who attempts to love you if only we receive it. He came to what was his own, and his own people did not receive him. Do we want to receive the Lord? And you know Jesus gave us his mom, right? Those are the best. He gives us his mom. We need Our Lady. If you're this Advent season, you're thinking, all right, I got 24 days to prepare for Jesus coming at Christmas. You talk to Mary. She gets stuff done, this woman does. She's incredible. You think your life's a mess? She knows it, and she figures things out. You should pray a rosary every day from now till Christmas. You'd be amazed at what Our Lady can accomplish. Men, I'm looking at you. Men, pray the rosary. Don't leave it to your wives. Real men pray the rosary and ask Mary to provide because she wants to. But she's a good mom, that she always leads us to her son so that we can grow in faith, so we can continue to lean on the Lord. We ask for more faith. We ask for more hope. We ask for more hope that says to us that our sufferings in this present world will always give way to the good designs that the Lord has planned. You know, in November, we had all these first reconciliations here and at Lourdes and at Sacred Heart. And I asked all these little kids, their confessions are super boring. No offense to the second graders out there. But I asked them afterwards, I said, do you think God has a plan for your life? Children know. Say, yeah, God has a plan for my life. I asked, do you think God has a good plan for your life? I say, yeah, I think God has a good plan for my life. And I said, do you think you can screw up God's plan? And that's kind of a tough question, really. And they say, yeah, I think I can screw up. And I say, how do you screw up God's plan? And they say, sin. Children know. The children know. When I listen to my voice, when I do my own thing, when I control my own life, when I go against the Lord's will, God has a good plan for your life. Do you believe that? Do you think in the future he has good things planned for you, that he doesn't have plans of mediocrity and loneliness and everlasting agony, that the Lord actually wants to bless you in the future. Like, the sufferings of this present world will give way to the good things that God has prepared in the future. And when we cling to that truth, we unite to the Lord in hope. Lord, you're going to take care of me. You are going to take care of me. We ask for more faith, we ask for more hope, and we ask for more charity, more love, God's love. St. John of the Cross said, "In the twilight of our lives, we will be judged on love alone." Peter, do you love me? Yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Peter, do you love me? Yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Peter, do you love me? Jesus has to ask him after Peter betrays Jesus. And we will be judged on love alone. And love isn't a feeling. It's a conscious choice, conscious action of giving myself to someone over and over and over again, to giving myself into a loving relationship. And it asks a lot of it. There's always suffering. There's no real love in this world without suffering. So don't make a fantasy about whatever relationships you want or don't have currently. There's always suffering in real love. And so we need to ask the Lord for more love, because our hearts are too small and too fickle and too satisfied by worldly things. Guys, I want to love with all my heart, not like 10% of my heart or like a quarter of my heart or like 80%. I don't know what that would look like. Maybe heaven. But I know I'm capable of more love. And so I need to ask the Lord to expand my heart. Jesus, give me your heart. Give me your love. Give me your compassion. Give me your forgiveness, your mercy. And when we ask for more, he does give us more. Ask for more faith, more hope, and more charity. Our light is so dim compared to the light of Jesus Christ. Because his light has come into the world, and the darkness has not overcome it. But how often are we overcome by the darkness of our lives? And so he comes to a people of his own, and you and I need to accept him. Our light grows in proportion to how much we allow the Lord to influence our lives. So we ask, you ask, for faith, hope, and charity so that God can bring his light into your darkness. That's what's going to transform us during this Advent season as we prepare for Christ coming at Christmas, as we prepare for him to come into our lives every day. Ask for more faith, more hope, and more charity.